Hello, and welcome back to We Are the Weirdos, Mister, the podcast for all things cult, camp, queer, and creepy. I am your host, Hillary Michelle Post, and I'm joined today by my sister, Lace Mason. Say hi, Lace.
Hi, Lace.
And we're also joined once again by her husband, my brother-in-law, Sam Mason. Say hi, Sam.
Hello.
Welcome back. Thank you for joining us. Appreciate it. Well, happy Halloween to everybody. Tis the season. And to celebrate my favorite holiday and the favorite holiday of all my creeps, queers, and weirdos of the world, this is a very special episode because we are finally going to talk about Rocky Horror Picture Show, the most cult, camp, queer, and creepy movie of all time. So you may ask, why has it taken like 4 years to finally do this movie? Well, it's because I had such lofty goals that centered around finally exposing our mother to one of the most formative movies of my entire life. I was going to make her watch it. I was going to take her to a shadow cast, maybe even take her to a live stage production of the musical, which is in fact going on nearby this season at a local theater company. And then I'd be able to regale you all with not only the story of the film, but also the hilarity that would ensue with Mom. Well, on a rainy Saturday afternoon a couple weeks ago, I put on the movie, didn't make a big deal about it. It was just Mom and I hanging out, and I just put it on just to see what would happen. Not only did Mom try her damnedest to sleep through the whole thing, what she didn't sleep through, she deemed, and I quote, the dumbest thing she's ever seen.
To be fair, that's exactly how I felt the first time I watched it.
That's what a lot of people say, true. But it was then that I remembered that my dear sweet mother is a normie, and my dreams were dashed. So I said, fuck it, we're doing this episode without any Mom anecdotes. Oh well.
This would have been like one of the first vibe ones you ever did. I'm just saying.
Yeah, people constantly just like, when are you going to do Rocky Horror? And it's one of those things, too, of like, I could never do it justice. I would have to talk about it for hours to really get into everything. But, we're going to try. So, first and foremost, I want to know how each of you first became acquainted with the film.
You were there.
I was here. I was there.
You were with us the first time we watched it. Or first time I watched it, because it was me and you and Sam and Corey Rush.
Oh, I don't remember that at all.
In the living room here.
Really?
Yeah, I don't remember that. That's so funny.
Because I was like, so freaked out. Because it was like my first exposure to like, not so normie straight Sam. Mm. Like I'd never seen him watch anything weird or anything musically or anything. I don't know. It was just different. Right. What I was used to being exposed to with him. And because I'm always afraid of, like, you know, my boyfriends being gay because they are. I watch this movie and I'm, like, attracted to Tim Curry in freaking pantyhose. So I'm automatically assuming that he is, too. And I am freaking the hell out. So it ended, and I was like, oh, my God, I need to go take a shower. And I did, probably, thinking, oh, God, Corey and Sam are going to run off together, and they're going to watch Rocky Horror Picture Show together. And then it wasn't until after that I realized how big of a deal it really was to certain people. Mm. You tell her how you were exposed to it.
Well, when I first moved to Ohio, my babysitter was bored one night and decided that she thought we should watch Rocky Horror.
How old were you?
Well, I was in seventh grade.
His mom was not happy. Not happy.
Now, she did sit and watch it with me today and told me it was the first time she'd ever watched it beginning to end.
Oh, I'm damned.
Why did you have a babysitter in seventh grade?
She laughed through the whole thing.
Oh, good.
She thought she got a kick out of Tim Curry and Meatloaf. Because Mom worked nights. and didn't want me alone all the time.
I was going to say, like, a babysitter in seventh grade? But, I mean, if it was overnight, I get that. We always had grandma, thank God.
Yeah, I was going to say, we technically always had a babysitter, kind of.
Grandma, I'm going to take the car. Okay.
Okay.
I'm 14.
Grandma's going to have four boys over. Okay.
There'll be macaroni in this house.
I just randomly watched it one night when I was very young on AMC. I remember it was the same night. It was back to back. It was that and the Ziggy Stardust concert at the Hammersmith that was filmed. Yeah. That night, I've talked about that night on here before because it was so informative to me. But I already liked David Bowie because I was familiar with his music, but I also liked him because of Labyrinth. And then I saw him as Ziggy Stardust, and I was just like, holy shit. And I already liked Tim Curry because he was in a bunch of stuff when I was little, especially Muppet Treasure Island, which I loved when I was little. And then I saw him in this, I was like, holy shit. So that whole night just like set a path for Kinky Weird Hillary for the rest of her life. But you know what's funny? The first time I ever heard of Rocky Horror and was ever exposed to it in any capacity was that episode of Drew Carey's show. Do you remember that episode?
Yeah. Uh-huh. Yeah.
Yeah. It's like him and his friends like Rocky Horror. And then they have another group of people who want the midnight movie to be Priscilla, Queen of the Desert. And they have like a whole dance off thing. So that was the first time I ever heard the music from it or seen any costumes from it, but I still didn't understand. I had no context. But I remember watching the movie and being like, oh, okay. I get that episode now.
And it's been done on so many different shows.
That's the only episode of Glee I ever watched.
Yeah. That episode is terrible.
Right. I never went back.
Yeah. How many times have you guys seen it in a theater?
Twice.
Yeah.
They, Lacey and Sam, took me and my friend Leona when we were like in high school. We like, they kind of snuck me in because we weren't supposed to be in unless you're 18. I think we weren't 18 yet.
Sam got major cool points for that.
Oh, totally. It was really funny. Leo and I dressed up and everything. We got all dolled up and that was really fun. And then the only other time I've seen it in like a live capacity was again in college. It was really, you guys would have appreciated it. It wasn't like in a theater. It was upstairs of a bar.
Oh, wow.
So yeah, they projected the movie onto the wall behind like this little performance space. And then it was my friends, because it was all theater kids, obviously. It wasn't a official theater mounting, school of theater mounting, but it was all theater kids. They put on the show in front of the wall, in front of the projection, and it was standing room only. So it was like being at a concert. We were all just squished together, everyone all hot and sweaty and covered in lipstick. And all the Transylvanians were all like super duper dressed up, and they just mingled in the crowd the whole time. And most of them like wouldn't talk. They would just like come up to you and just like make out with you. It was so bizarre. I was like a sophomore in college. I was just like, this is awesome. So that was a lot of fun. So those are the only times I've ever seen it live. Every other time has just been on TV.
We went, I think it was like the Ohio Theater or something. I don't remember who put it on, if it was school kids. I don't remember.
It was like an Ohio State troop or something.
Yeah, I don't know. It was just a huge theater and it was cool.
That's cool. Was that before or after you took Leona and I?
After.
Excuse me. And it's really funny because mom's good friend Laura really loves Rocky Horror, and mom can't wrap her brain around it. She's like, I can't believe she loves this. What, why? I'm like, Mom, it's like a whole thing.
To be honest, I really can't. Because I love Laura, but she's very vanilla, it seems like.
She's surprising. Like, there's some horror movies that she really digs. Like, there's some things. But there's a lot of stuff that her mom don't. Like, for instance, she didn't care for Christmas Vacation. Like, we talked it up and we watched it with her and she was just like, okay. And we're just like, what? So, wow. Yeah, whoa. Laura's a grab bag of different stuff. She's interesting. She's not predictable, I guess, is what I'm trying to say. So I'm going to give some background on the movie before we get into it. And the movie is so well known by listeners. I think we'll go through some trivia and we'll go through some of the music, but I don't think we're going to go too extraneously plot point for plot point because A, there's not much. And B, I haven't watched it for like 3 weeks. I haven't had time to watch it since I watched it a while ago. I feel bad because this is the second episode I've recorded where I was just like, it was like weeks ago when I watched this movie, so strap in.
Watch this movie we watch it every Halloween, like a lot, but it's probably the only movie we watch consistently every year around this time of year, honestly. And yeah. Some Scream movies.
Oh, I have my whole repertoire. I was like, we gotta watch Beetlejuice. We gotta watch Hocus Pocus. We gotta watch Nightmare Before Christmas. All sorts of stuff. But this was on the list, so this was early October that I watched this. It's been a busy spooky season for me. And my research, what's funny is I love this movie so much, but I didn't go into it knowing a bunch of trivia like I usually do. So a lot of my research, you guys will probably be like, yeah, duh, Hillary. But I'm like, I didn't know that. It's so really cool. and like I usually do, I was doing research when I wasn't supposed to be. We'll just say that. So indulge me as I do a little background on the movie. It is, of course, it began as a stage musical with book, lyric, and music written by Richard O'Brien, who stars in the film as Riff Raff. O'Brien wrote most of the show over the span of one winter in the early 70s. He wanted to combine his love of schlock horror and sci-fi films, 50s rock and roll musicals, and the then burgeoning glam rock scene. The result was the Rocky Horror Show, which was first mounted in the experimental theater space above the Royal Court Theater in Chelsea, London. This theater space only sat about 60 people, but it was such a success that it quickly transferred to the 230-seat Chelsea Classic Cinema on King's Road in 73, then the 500-seat King's Road Theater later that fall, where it ran for 6 years.
Wow.
The show premiered in the U.S. in 74 with a successful run at the Roxy Theater in L.A., and the following year, in 75, it premiered on Broadway at the 1,000-seat Belasco Theater. The film adaptation, and I didn't ask you guys, have you guys ever seen just a stage production of it?
I'm trying to remember. They ran the movie, didn't they?
No, that was just stage.
That was just stage,
Yeah, I've never seen just a straight-up stage production. And a local, like I said earlier, a local theater is doing it this weekend and next. And I'm not going to name the theater because I don't want to put them on blast, but I decided not to go, A, because I didn't really have anyone to take. I could have scrounged somebody up, but B, it's like a really small theater and I'm bigger than I was last time I was there. And I'm just like, I'll just be uncomfy. You know what I mean? There's just some theater spaces where you're already like, I have no elbow room. I'm just like, I'm fat. I don't have room for that. But this morning I was a little relieved. Remind me later, I'll send you a picture. I saw a picture of, they've been slowly releasing production photos and they released the official promotional photo of Columbia, and you guys, she looked awful. Like a gold Party City top hat, an all black sequin jacket, like an old navy teal tank top.
No, I'm literally wearing one of those right now. Come on. Come on.
And she had on a red wig, a short red wig, and you could see her hair sticking out underneath. Like, they didn't even cover all of her hair.
Oh, man.
I'm just like, first off, if I was cast in a production of Rocky Horror, no matter what the role, and they said, this is what your hair is going to look like, I'll be like, fuck your wig. I'm cutting and dyeing my hair and doing it. You know what I mean? I'd be like, if I'm going to be Columbia, you can cut and dye my hair because it, come on now. But after I saw that picture, I'm just like, I don't think I'm missing anything.
Yeah. Good call.
Yeah. And if anyone from that production happens to be listening to this, I'm really sorry. Please don't take it too much of offense and know that my fat ass wouldn't have gone to see it anyway. So get bigger seats. Booyah. Anyway, the film adaptation was produced by Michael White Productions and distributed by 20th Century Fox. While most of the cast from the London stage production was cast in the film, Fox insisted on casting two American actors in the roles of Brad and Janet, Barry Bostwick and Susan Sarandon, respectively. Steve Martin auditioned for the role of Brad Majors.
What?
Yeah. That would have been really cool. Vincent Price was offered the role of the criminologist, but turned it down due to scheduling conflicts. He was actually really interested in the role, as he had seen in the West End musical and loved it. That also would have been really cool.
Yeah, very cool.
I love Vincent Price. I love those those Bill Hader, Vincent Price.
Yeah.
Oh my god.
Nails. And Fred Armisen. Fred Armisen is Liberace. So fucking funny. Like, when he's talking to Liberace, he's like, save your sassy asides for your windowless bars. So good. So filming took place from mid-October to mid-December of 74 in England, partially at Bray Studios and partially at Oakley Court, which is an 1857 Victorian Gothic manor in Berkshire. The manor had been used in a number of Hammer horror films, which were the exact type of movies that the film is a parody and homage to. At the time of filming, however, the house was in poor condition and was very wet and cold. Production set up a warm room with several space heaters where the actors could warm up until the room caught fire.
Oh, yeah.
With such damp conditions and with being scantily clad through most of the film, Susan Sarandon actually got pneumonia during production.
Wow.
But she still insisted on to keep working. She, like, I guess early on in production, she was just like, this kind of sucks, guys. And they're like, oh, you're just being a diva. You're just hard to work with. And then she was like, well, fine, fuck you. And then she just, like, buckled down. And then when she actually got really sick, she's like, no, I'm hard to work with. Blah, blah, blah. I'm going to keep working. Fuck you. God, I love her. She's so great. Richard Bryan has said in an interview once that her and Barry were dating at the time, but I feel like every movie that Susan Sarandon has ever made, they're always like, oh, well, she was dating such and such at the time. Like, I think Susan Sarandon just, like, bones everybody. And I mean that in a positive way.
Right. Like, wouldn't you? I mean.
Good. I mean, goddamn. Because there were rumors that she was stooping David Bowie when they did The Hunger. Like, every movie I hear, it's just like, oh, yeah, they were dating. I'm like, were they dating? Or were they sleeping together? So the makeup looks in the film were designed by Pierre Laroche, who had been a makeup artist for the likes of Mick Jagger and David Bowie. Mick Jagger, by the way, also wanted to be in this movie. He wanted to be Frankenfurter.
Oh, hell no.
Yeah. I mean, it wouldn't have been bad, but it wouldn't have been
bad. I can't even imagine. I can actually see David Bowie doing it.
Yeah, that'd be hot.
He's already traumatized me enough with his codpiece. I don't need to see it. I don't need to see it.
You should read one of my favorite books is the memoir that his ex-wife, his first wife, wrote, Backstage Passes with Angela Bowie. And I think I forget what the nickname is, but she talks about David Bowie's dick so much that she, like, names it. Apparently it's infamous. So I was just like, well, at least the codpiece in Labyrinth wasn't, like, lying to us. Apparently he was in down pretty well.
Yeah, I'd like to think that they didn't do that just for fun, I guess. Right.
Well, never know. Go watch, everyone, go listen to the episode I do on Labyrinth where I discuss the themes of sexuality in Labyrinth. And just a little plug there. So where was I? Oh, costumes were designed by Sue Blaine, who said she says that she was inspired by the punk scene, but ultimately the film's cult success led to it further influencing the punk style. So it was kind of like an Ouroboros sort of situation. Many of the costume pieces were recycled from the original stage production, and many props and set pieces were actually from Hammer horror productions, like Rocky's tank and his wrapped up body in the tank and stuff is actually from like a Hammer's Frankenstein film.
Oh, neat.
Yeah. So, Scotty. Scotty's sitting next to me clawing me, trying to get my attention. I see you. Hello. So let's dive into the film. So the opening scene, when you guys saw the stage production, was there like an usherette character that did this opening song, or do you remember?
I don't remember.
I feel like one, like either Magenta or Columbia that just like ran the entire thing.
I think it was, yeah.
I want to say whoever it was, she was a chubby girl.
Oh,
maybe it was Columbia, because I'm like, yes! but she just, I think she pretty much kind of narrated and went through the entire thing off to the side.
Oh, that's cool. It like, as instead of like a criminologist type character, it was that person.
Yeah, I think so.
And a lot of productions, it usually is recycled. It's either Magenta or Columbia. But there's like an usherette character, like in a little usherette costume with like a candy thing, and she does the whole thing. I don't know where they came up with the idea of translating that into just the lips, but it's a very cool effect. We have our opening song, science fiction double feature. The lips that we see are actually Patricia Quinn's, but the voice is Richard O'Brien. And there's so many references, like can't even begin to where do you even start? Like there's the whole song is just like a million references to kind of set you on the path of this is what we're digging into. This is what is inspiring this universe, right?
But that doesn't mean anything when they mean nothing to you. I could sing that song now, right. And none of those mean. I'm like, who is that? I have no idea what any of it means.
Oh well, totally. But I mean, you'd have to think most. A lot of those movies were more contemporary to the people at the time,
right? Who'd,
you know what I mean? And even if they weren't, it has, you know, the reverse effect now that the people that like Rocky Horror, instead of people who are into that kind of stuff being like, oh, well, then I would like Rocky Horror. Now it's like, oh, I like Rocky Horror. Then maybe I'll like this stuff that's being referenced.
Right.
So, yeah. It's like a Cliff Notes version for geeks, you know? And then the film opens on the wedding of Betty Monroe. And what's the guy's name?
Ralph Hapshatt.
There you go. There it is. All I know is that the lady that plays Betty, her name's Hillary. Yeah. Spelled my name and everything. My way and everything. So we see Ralph and Betty getting married. And Janet Weiss, Susan Sarandon character, catches the bouquet. And we see Ralph giving Brad like a little pep talk, right? And in the background, we see the priest that did the marriage, and it's Tim Curry. And Richard O'Brien and Patricia are the like American Gothic creepy couple in the background. I think Columbia is in around there somewhere too in that scene. But it's all just like little Easter egg stuff in the background to pick up. Then we get our second song, which is Damn It, Janet. And Heather Hare, who infamously, as we all know, hates musicals, she decided to watch it for the first time the other night. And she texts me and she's like, I'm struggling. But every time in the background of that song, when they were like, Janet, Heather would laugh her ass off. She's like, that is pulling me through because it's so funny. I'm like, the whole movie's funny, Heather. But I did ask her, I was like, what are you thinking? Why are you trying to watch? You hate musicals. And she's like, I'm going to finish it, I promise.
That's something she and I have in common, for sure.
You don't hate musicals.
I, in general, yes, I do.
Not the music, like Heather,
it has to be something I probably already like. Or it has to be a story that I already like. There's like Rocky Horror Picture, Mamma Mia. That's all I have.
Oh, that's not true. I bet if you thought about it, you'd think of more.
Maybe.
You like Grease? You like the Grease movies? Yeah, I'm
like, oh, no. Oh,
yeah. What?
I just don't like them. Just the idea of them. I get so ADD. I'm like, stop singing. And I know that's an idea, but they never stop fucking singing. Never.
Well, maybe you are bad as Heather. How did you guys get cursed with me? Like, sister and my best friend have, who hate musicals.
Nothing without you, yeah.
Dumb little thing. You said something about Easter eggs.
Mm-hmm.
That term was coined because of this movie.
Really?
They did a Easter egg hunt one day before filming, and they couldn't find them all. So in the movie, the scene where Frank's sitting on the throne right at the beginning, underneath of him, there's an Easter egg on his chair.
Huh. How weird. That's doubly weird because they filmed in October.
Yeah.
Ew. Gross. I hope they're plastic.
I was going to say, maybe they had candy in them or something.
No, they were real. Because they said they couldn't find them all. And they said they showed up in the movie, which now gives you the looking for Easter eggs in a movie.
Gotcha.
So during the song, Damn It, Janet, Brad proposes to Janet. And they just agree that before they get married, they have to go and visit their professor that they who taught the class that they met in, Dr. Scott. So that's the sets us on the trajectory of the rest of the movie. Now, okay, this little tidbit has been killing me. I've been wanting to talk about it since we first started recording because I don't know if it's true. I don't even remember where this shot is in the movie, though I think it's very early on when after this song, when the criminologist is talking, there's a shot. I'm trying to get comfortable. Please excuse me. All the noise I'm making. There's a shot of a map, right? Mm-hmm. That is kind of supposed to establish where we are because the town that it's set in is called Denton, right? But that's just like a made up town. But the map that they show on screen is of southeastern Ohio.
Sam's shaking his head. You have to say things because she can't hear it.
I'm just agreeing.
And if you look, though it's very blurry, apparently if you look where Frankenfurter's castle appears is MacArthur.
Oh, cool.
Stop it.
Yeah. So when I read that, I like frantically texted Julie and Heather. I'm like, oh my God. Because that's where Heather lives. She lives in MacArthur.
Right.
Well, she's reading The Plains Dealer.
Right, which is out of what, Cleveland?
Yeah.
Yeah. So, very, very technically, we guess, Rocky Horror takes place in Ohio. Which, why an alien would land in Ohio and settle down, who knows. But that tickled the hell out of me when I read that.
Neat.
Yeah. So, Brad and Janet are driving to see Dr. Scott. And they keep there. It's at night. It's really rainy. It's funny on the radio. They're listening to Nixon's resignation speech, I think. Which is very funny because the movie is supposed to be set in November and that happened in like April. So Richard O'Brien once said that he likes to imagine that Brad is such a fucking douche that he recorded it and taped it and listens to it just for fun.
Yeah, that would make sense.
That tracks. But while they drive, they keep seeing motorcyclists drive in the opposite direction. And they make a comment on it. And then they reach a point in the road where it's a dead end. It's completely cut off. And Janet even makes the point. She's like, well, where did those motorcyclists come from then? If it's, you know, that there's no opposite coming from the opposite direction. Which Brad just ignores. But they get a flat tire, and is it the dead end and a flat tire?
Yes.
Like, it hit the dead end, and then they turn around and get a flat tire, yeah. So Brad's like, well, we saw that castle a while back, which is funny because if you're in Ohio and you just like see a castle,
right,
it would be a little bit more of like, huh. But they're like, we'll just go back to that castle we saw a while back. So they walk in the rain and they sing over at Frankenstein Place. And it should be noted that like Susan Sarandon doesn't like her singing voice and was really nervous to even audition. They made her sing like Happy Birthday or something because she was like phobic about it almost. And she's
I don't blame her.
Yeah, I was gonna say she's not terrible, but she's not great. because like Richard O'Brien is great.
Yeah.
He's really good in this song in particular. So they arrive at the castle and Riff Raff, who's like an emaciated, creepy, balding butler, and Magenta, who's this hot ass maid, greet them at the door. And they welcome them in, and you know, they ask to use the phone, so they let them come in. And then we get the time warp, which, to my understanding, when it was written for the original show, it was just kind of padding. The show was really short, and they're like, we need more songs. So, Richard O'Brien, even though this is like, oh, peanut. Sorry, he jumped right on my computer with a toy in his mouth right in front of me. Play with me. Anyway, this song is like the most famous song of the whole show at this point, next to second only to maybe Sweet Transvestite. And it was just a filler song. But we meet Riff Raff and Magenta, and then during the duration of the song, we meet Columbia and all the Transylvanians. They're having this big party, right? And the Time Warp, of course, infamously has like a dance you can follow along to, which is probably why it's so memorable, why it sticks out to people.
Mm-hmm.
And at the beginning of that song, when Riff Raff is like dusting the clock with mm-hmm. the skeleton in it, lore says that that is an actual skeleton, and that is the skeleton of the woman who like commissioned the clock, and that that clock ended up being like auctioned off for like $35,000 or something decades later.
What did we see that in?
That's what I was trying
to remember. Damn it, Frank, we just saw it.
I know, I was trying to remember.
What?
On a Rocky Horror group I'm on Facebook posted a picture of someone else standing in front of that clock in like a completely different.
No, I thought it was Tim Curry, but in The Worst Witch.
It is. It's The Worst Witch.
Oh. Huh.
The clock appears in a different movie.
Oh, well, that's possible too. I wonder. I don't know, because they used a bunch of props and stuff from a bunch of movies, so it probably was in multiple stuff. You'd think that somewhere in my research they would have mentioned that, though. That's so funny.
Well, he came up with that somewhere, so he must have read it somewhere.
Well, I showed you a picture of it.
He's like, have you ever heard of this movie? And I'm like, dude, we did a podcast on that shit.
Yeah, go listen to that episode, everybody. Just gotta keep plugging other episodes. And then, of course, we get to Sweet Transvestite and the introduction of Tim Curry's character, Frankenfurter. He's so hot. Why is he so hot?
I don't know, but he really is.
He's so hot. Ah! Infamously just wearing nothing but a corset and stockings and garters and heels, of course, which the director of the original stage production said that's really when he would get into characters. Once he put his heels on, he was in it.
God, they're glorious. The most glorious shoes I've ever seen.
Oh yeah, rhinestoned it out. My favorite costume piece of the whole movie, though, is his leather jacket. That is only in like one scene, but there's so many details on it. There's so many cool pins and shit, and he's so hot. Something weirdly hot about someone in just like panties and a leather jacket. But he comes down from his elevator, and we, through the lyrics of the song, we learned that he's, quote, a sweet transvestite from transsexual Transylvania. So, of course, at this point in the story, we just assume that he means literally Transylvania, the place. Sam just sent me a photo. Oh, my God. I even used that as my promotional image in the podcast and never even noticed.
Yeah.
Huh. Wild. I'm damned. So, Sweet Transvestite. Yes. So at this point, we assume that Transylvania, they mean like the place, right? So because of that, well, even that would have made sense because Transylvania is a completely different place. But early on in the stage show, Tim Curry was playing with a German accent because he's supposed to be like a mad scientist type deal. So he was playing with German accent until he was riding on the bus one day and he heard these like really posh women talking and they like kind of sound like Queen Elizabeth. And he's like, that's it. That's the voice. So his accent isn't even really his real accent. It's very posh. It's very put on and exaggerated. I love it.
I was singing Sweet Transvestite at 12:30 a.m. at Walmart. Oh, yeah.
Like you do.
Yeah, I listened to a soundtrack last night while I was working.
That's an interesting thing, too, the term transvestite, which has kind of been retired, even though it's a completely different thing. Like, because there's a difference between being transgender and being a transvestite, right?
Mm-hmm.
So, like, he's not transgender. He still identifies as a man, but he's just a man that likes to wear baby's clothes. And infamously, for a long time, the most famous transvestite in pop culture of our lifetime, anyway, was Eddie Izzard. But Eddie Izzard has actually recently come out to use she, her pronouns. So she's actually transgender. So it's like, was not everybody who's ever claimed to be transvestite is secretly transgender, not necessarily, but it did evolve so much into different, we just don't use the word transvestite. Like if you're a dude who likes to wear dresses, it's just like, all right, we don't need a whole separate term for that. You're just a dude who wears dresses. They're just clothes.
Like he's a dude that wears dresses. Like, why is there even a term for it?
Right. It's like they're clothes. They're just clothes.
All dudes dress like women. Like we all were wearing skirts and pantyhose and all kinds of dumb shit.
Right. And if like a girl likes to wear boxers instead of panties, you wouldn't be like, oh, well, she's a crossdresser. She's a transvestite. But if a man likes to wear lacy panties under his docks, people were like, oh, well, it's just clothes. Who cares?
Sorry, but, dude. It sucks to be a man. You can't wear panties if you want to wear panties.
You can't wear panties. You know what? You know why? Because fucking Tim Curry walked a mile.
Yes, he did.
And that's what's so like transgressive about this movie, because granted, the 70s were a wild time, but you just didn't see shit like this.
Right.
That's why this movie is so important to queer culture, because not only is he a transvestite or whatever, he wears women's clothes, but the character is queer in general. Mm-hmm. And that was just such an enormous thing. And you have to imagine there were probably so many people who were closeted or maybe never even thought about it before, but right. then saw Tim Curry in those stockings and were like, holy shit, I have a boner. And what does that mean? I mean, right?
Right.
So Sweet Transvestite changed everything for me, for a generation, several generations, for everybody, changed everything. So after his introduction song, he invites Brad and Janet up to his lab to see, as the lyric said, he's been working on a man. And so we go to the laboratory. All the Transylvanians follow. Brad and Janet get stripped out of their wet clothes and are just in their undies and lab coats. And Frank puts on a puts on scrubs, right?
Mm-hmm.
And he has a little pink triangle on his little outfit. And that pink triangle was used by the Nazis during the Holocaust too, because it doesn't get talked about as much, but in addition to the genocide of Jewish people, it was also of queer people, of Romani people, and they would put labels on you, and the pink triangle was the label for gay people. But when Nazis used it, it was pointing down, but now we use it pointing up as like a pride symbol.
Yeah.
Were you going to say something, Sam?
Not at all.
Oh, I thought I heard you say something. My bad. So we are introduced to the character Rocky, who is like a Frankenstein monster character, but he's super hot. He's just like this little beefcake that Frank created. And he's in this tank that they like turn these dials and it fills the tank with like rainbow colors. It's so silly. None of it makes sense. But apparently like all the knobs he turns during that scene, that Frank turns during that scene, are like very deliberate and in a very certain order. And they're like yelling the order that he's supposed to turn them off camera to him. So if you look at his face, he has like this panicked, weird look on his face. It's because he generally is just like, what the fuck am I doing? What? Which one?
Why?
Am I doing?
Why does it matter?
It doesn't matter. It's so silly. I don't know if they wanted like the colors to go in the order of the rainbow and the tank, or I don't know.
His reaction to that though is great.
Yeah, it is very funny. He's so great. So we meet Rocky, and when he's born in his little gold booty shorts, he sings Sword of Damocles, which, do you know, Sam, Peter Hinwood plays Rocky. I can't remember, was that his singing voice, or was he dubbed?
I believe he's dubbed.
I think so too.
Because this is the only thing he ever did also, I believe.
Yeah, I think he like sells antiques now or something.
Yeah.
Yeah, I was the guy in the gold pants. Shut up.
Yeah, I'm sure. Because bless his heart, he's like, Rocky has, he doesn't really speak. He's like the least memorable character. And Dottie decided to come in here and drop a huge stinky load while I'm trying to work. Thanks, Dottie. Sorry, what were you saying?
Oh, I just said Rocky, so named for the rocks in his head.
Right, exactly. And something, I've seen this movie a million times, never noticed until I read this. The makeup department created a plug that fit over Peter Hinwood's belly button to hide it from view during filming. Since Rocky Horror was created by Frankenfurter completely from scratch, that means he didn't have an umbilical cord and therefore shouldn't have a belly button.
Huh. I'm just noticing, we're watching it right now, it's like running. I'm just noticing how bald he is on top. Like that. Like, why is his hair so stupid? Because it's all Donald Trump brushed from the back. Look at it. Brushed from the back of his crown, clear to the front. This poor, he's only got like four hairs at this point. Oh, poor guy. Couldn't we just put like a bad wig on him or something?
Yeah, no kidding.
Oh, poor Rocky. He's got like 13 abs though.
He does. Yeah, you don't have to have hair when you're built like that.
Nobody's looking at his head.
We then get Frank's song to Rocky called I Can Make You a Man, all about, you know, it's a play on words. It's actually a line pulled from like Beefcake magazines that Richard O'Brien used to read. They would have advertisements for like weightlifting. It was like, I can make you a man, blah, blah, blah. And he can make him a man literally because he made him. He can make him a man because he's encouraging him to work out. And he can make him a man because he's going to have sex with him. So it's a triple entendre. Which comes first? Who enters first? Is it Eddie or Dr. Scott?
Eddie.
Eddie.
Eddie. Okay. So we get our introduction to Eddie, who is played by Meatloaf, who actually played Eddie in the Roxy Theater production in L.A. Now, traditionally, in the stage shows, oh, yes, this makes sense now. Okay, in the stage productions, whoever plays Eddie would also play Dr. Scott. And Meatloaf really wanted to do that for the movie, and they wouldn't let him, and he was really bummed because he was like, I was a great Dr. Scott. But Eddie comes driving out of this deep freeze that's in the laboratory on his motorcycle. And you can tell his like head is, he has a big wound on his head. And according to Meatloaf, he said Elvis Presley was the studio's first choice to play Eddie. And Elvis actually expressed some interest in the role, but ended up not doing it.
Too sexy. So,
well, not in 74.
Oh, God, yeah.
And for the record, I think Meatloaf in this movie is super sexy.
I'm conflicted by those feelings, but I kind of do too.
Yeah. Yeah. I love Meatloaf. I mean, even if you don't think he's sexy, which I think he is, his voice is enough to.
Oh, yeah.
And we get Hot Patootie Bless My Soul, which is probably my second favorite song after Sweet Transvestite. It's just, it's a bop. But the motorcycle driving around in this scene was like a really dangerous stunt. And the stuntman like hurt himself. His bike fell on top of him and Meatloaf had to like pull it off of him. And then the footage we have of Meatloaf's face riding on the motorcycle, they just had him in a wheelchair that they put a handlebars and a shield on. And pushed him around the set and filmed him like that because it was too dangerous to actually film on a motorcycle.
You couldn't even just like sit on a bike.
No, hell, easier just put him in a wheelchair.
Oh my God.
But Frank promptly kills Eddie again. Because I guess the conceit was that he used half of Eddie's brain on Rocky. So that's why Eddie has like a big wound on in his head and why Frank thought he was dead because he took half his brain. But he like kills him with an axe. And then we get a reprise of I Can Make You a Man. And then we get Dr. Scott's entrance, right?
Yeah, here shortly.
No, you got to go through Touch Me first.
Yeah.
Which is my favorite.
Oh, okay. Because I'm hung up on, well, we'll get there. I'm hung up on Dr. Scott's entrance that I just have to talk about because it's hysterical to me. Okay. So we get the reprise of I Can Make You a Man. And Frank and Rocky retire to their little love den. And everyone else like goes to bed. So Brad and Janet go to separate rooms. And then we get these cute little like I say cute, but they're not really. These little shadow scenes where Frank seduces both Janet and Brad. And I think they did this in shadow in the stage play too. So that was just a holdover. Which is a shame because it would have been funny to see Frank like in bad wigs, like actually,
yeah,
you know, corrupting them. But consent is important, boys and girls. But in the end, they both end up consenting to having a little fun with Frank. And then afterwards, Janet is all upset and confused, and she comes out of her room and she like stumbles back into the lab. And runs into Rocky. And now that she's had a little taste of some nookie, now she wants more. And she gets it on with Rocky to Touch a Touch a Touch Me, which is my least favorite song of the musical. probably due in a little bit because Susan Sarandon can't sing, but also because it's just an annoying song.
It's in my opinion. Shut the fuck up.
Is it really?
It really is. I blow my voice box every time I try to do it, and it is awful, but I don't know. I love it. Because I'm dirty. It's filthy.
It is. I swear to God, the lyrics seat wedding makes me gag every time. Something about heavy petting and leads to seat wedding. I was just like, what? Okay. Got it. Thanks, Janet.
Columbia are watching this the entire time. Like, the whole thing going on, everything going on, they're watching from, like, security cam.
I love Columbia's little pajamas. She has on, like, little striped pajamas and
Mickey Mouse ears.
tell us about it, Janet. I love it. So then everyone like bursts in on Janet and Rocky, and of course Frank is pissed off. And then this is where Dr. Scott comes in, right?
Yes.
Yeah. Dr. Scott bursts through the wall in his wheelchair into the lab. And the only reason that happened is because they forgot to build a door. They built that whole laboratory set, and the only entrance that they built was the elevator. And then that's like,
that I would do.
And then they get to the point of filming where Dr. Scott has to come in, and they don't have a door. So they're just like, just launch him through the fucking wall. So Dr. Scott arrives, and we have the whole, you know, Brad, Janet, Dr. Scott, Rocky, blah, 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 back and forth. And I love it when it gets to like Rocky's turn, he just doesn't say anything. He just like looks scared, just like a scared groundhog, just like, oh. But Magenta comes in and breaks up the awkwardness. She bangs a gong. She's like, dinner is prepared. So everyone files in for dinner. And I like to point out, I like in this scene that like Frank is wearing like kind of like a little sweatery thing, like this little mesh number over his instead of his corset. It's very cute.
Oh, that's a leather jacket. That is pretty hot. I don't understand the whole dinner thing. They're all in bed.
Yeah, right. The top line's hilarious.
And then all of a sudden they're eating. What the fuck?
The what?
They're eating dinner. Like, they've all gone to bed.
Oh, I know that part. I'm talking, what did Sam say?
Oh, I said this, the way the timeline's laid out is funny.
Oh, yeah. It's like, everyone go to bed. So it was just kind of like, well, Frank and Rocky went to bed to fuck, so I guess we'll all go to bed. It was like, oh, I guess everyone's up, so I guess we'll eat now. I like to imagine, in my personal headcanon, that dinner hadn't been planned, but once we get the reveal, we'll see that I think Riff Raff and Magenta just did it to fuck with everybody.
Oh, yeah, that makes sense.
So they're probably like, hey, everyone, come to dinner. And everyone's like, okay. And dinner also becomes like a little impromptu birthday party for Rocky. So Frank is wearing like a little party hat, and it's very funny.
This kills me when Dr. Scott's like making his entrance. Like, he's just moving like magnetically through the house. He's just like going real fast. Like, what the fuck is happening?
And it's so bad. You can see the wire pulling him around. Look, there's a groove cut in the carpet where the wire is.
Oh, God. The next song we get is Dr. Scott's song, where he sings about Eddie, because we've come to find that Eddie is Dr. Scott's nephew. And that's why he had showed up at the castle that night, because he was looking for Eddie. And I guess during this scene, when Barry Bostwick pounds his fist on the table, he accidentally pounded it on Susan Sarandon's hand.
Oh.
So the reaction from Sarandon is prominent and real. And apparently she got her revenge by, quote unquote, accidentally stepping on Bostwick's foot with her spiked heel later on during the floor show scene. Uh-huh. And his reaction is also visible. but at the end of the Eddie song, they pull like the tablecloth off of the table, and underneath is a casket that shows Eddie's like mutilated body, and the meat that they had been served was Eddie meat. And everyone's horrified. And when Janet is like freaked out, she goes into Rocky's arms, which pisses off Frank big time, obviously, because that's his man. And then we get Planet Schmanet Janet, or Wise Up Janet Weiss, which is a fun little number. I love the lyrics. It's like, your apple pie don't taste too nice. Just, it's so cutting. It's so cutting and bitchy. It's the bitchiest song. And it's basically just Frank, like, chasing Janet through the castle. And we all end up back in the lab. And it's so funny because in the track listing, the whole you're a hot dog, you better not try to hurt her, is considered its own song and is listed as track listing Planet Hot Dog.
Mm-hmm. Oh, wow.
I just always considered it as part of the end of Janet Weiss, but I guess not. And while that's going on, Frank is using a freeze ray to turn everyone into statues, right? So he turns Janet, Brad, Dr. Scott, and Rocky into statues. And while he puts them all in on a stage, because of course he has a whole theater as part of this castle, he puts them on stage and he puts them all in drag. And then we get Rose Tint My World, which is also, I've said this about half the songs on the show, but it's a really good song.
That's okay. Your favorite, didn't it?
That one and Superheroes.
Mm. Which isn't even in the like the American cut, is it?
I don't think so. I always watch the UK version, so I'm not sure anymore.
Yeah, I think that's not even in the original cut, and the one that airs in the States anyway. But Rose Tint My World, we get like a little, each verse is sung by a different character. Oh, I forgot, he freezes Columbia too. Because Columbia like confronts him at the end of Wise Up Janet Weiss, where she's like, I loved you, Eddie loved you, we loved each other, you used both of us, you fucked us all over, you suck. And so he freezes her. But during Rose Tint My World, each character sings a verse and gives like their own point of view of their backstory and like where they are now in their thought process. And my favorite verse is Brad's. Because he's so conflicted, but he's just like, I feel sexy. He's like, he's so conflicted because he feels so liberated, but he feels guilty about it, right?
Mm-hmm.
Because whereas Janet also feels liberated, it's not in the same context because now she's like, you know, a cis woman who has had sex with a few men. But Brad has gotten a little nookie from Frank, too. And now he's in drag. So he's just like, there's a lot to go going on for poor Brad. His woman cheated on him. He cheated on his woman. Now he's, you know, in panties. So he's had a long day. And then we get Don't Dream It, Be It, which is basically just an orgy song. You know, Frank sings about his feelings like everyone else had. But it all culminates into like a little orgy in the pool. And I guess that water was really cold.
Oh,
and the reason the way the director got everyone to get so rambunctious in that scene, he's just like, the hotter and freakier you guys get in that pool with each other, the sooner we can stop filming and you can get out. So everyone's just like, all right, wow. You know, they're all making out and I'm pretty sure there's a few nipple slips in that scene. Everyone's boobies are popping out of their corsets. It's just, it's wild. And of course, Don't Dream It, Be It is like the thesis statement of the movie, okay. Right? So after the little orgy scene, we get Wild and Untamed Thing. And like, we basically have not stopped singing since Planet Schmanet Janet. Like, it's all kind of runs together at this point. Ooh, Dottie just whipped the shit out of Peanut. She just walked. He was asleep. Wasn't even bothering her. And she just started whacking him.
Aw.
Poor Peanut. Aw. Anyway. We get Wild and Untamed thing. And everyone's like wet from the pool. And they all get up and they are doing this number. And then at the end, they get interrupted by Magenta and Riff Raff, who are now in these, they look completely different. They're in like these weird little alien costumes. No, not alien costumes, but like futuristic, like spaceman type little skirt dress things. So we get our sci-fi homage, right? And we discover that Transylvania was not the Transylvania of Europe, but the planet of Transylvania. And Riff Raff, Magenta, and Frank are all aliens. And they want to go back, and Frank doesn't. And so they usurp his power, and they shoot him. He, like, runs away. He, like, climbs up the curtain behind the floor show. But they shoot him dead, and Rocky mourns over his body. And then the castle takes off like a rocket ship.
So fucking weird.
It's very weird. It's so weird to try to describe this. If you've made it this far and you've never seen Rocky Horror, God bless you, because what the fuck are we even talking about at this point? The castle takes off like a rocket ship and leaves Scott and Dr. Scott and Brad and Janet. And of course, we had the song I'm Going Home before, too. And then this is where Superheroes is, right?
Yes.
Yeah. And the, like we said, it's a bonus song that's in the stage show in the British cut, but not the American version of the film. So I haven't even heard it for years. And that's the movie. I mean, it has a runtime of like, what, 90 minutes? If that.
Yeah, it's definitely not very long.
Yeah. And it's so funny to think about. I can't even imagine going in blind. Like, okay, it's like 1973. I'm going to a random theater in London to see a show that's called the Rocky Horror Show. I have no context. I have no idea what I'm getting into. That alone would have been weird. Going into a movie theater and seeing this, a actual movie made and distributed by 20th Century Fox, with the exception of like Susan Sarandon and Barry Boswick and Meatloaf, like a bunch of people I probably have never seen before.
Mm-hmm.
Can you imagine?
No.
Like,
fucking all.
Yeah, like it bombed. Of course it bombed. Because when it first was released, it was playing in, you know, afternoon matinees in Minnesota, where just like randos are just like, what the fuck are we witnessing here?
Right.
So it takes a minute, but it starts to get an underground following where it's word of mouth, where all the weirdos are like, you got to see this shit. There's queer representation. There's rock music. There's awesome costumes. There's fucking Meatloaf on a motorcycle. Like, you got to come see this shit. It's wild. So the first midnight showing was on April Fool's Day, 1976, at the Waverly Theater in Greenwich Village. And then once Lacey and I talked a couple months ago about Pink Flamingos and like the midnight movie scene. Pink Flamingos even predates Rocky Horror. So you have these movies that are playing to like subcultures at midnight, where it's more rambunctious and wild. So we get this midnight showing following, and a part of, yes, you can love this movie earnestly, but part of the fun that people were having with this movie was making fun of the sillier moments. Mm-hmm. And screaming along to the screen. Like, what are some of, Sam, like, what's your favorite callback, like, audience participation?
I don't know. I like when he comes bursting through the wall and you throw the toilet paper.
Great Scott.
Of course, the first time when Riff opens the door, and everybody says, hello, Riff.
I like that, too.
I think my favorite is just, what do they call Brad and Janet every time they see him? That always makes me laugh. They call him, like, a dickhead and her a whore or something like that. Yeah. But, yeah, there's, you know, certain lines. The audience would call stuff back. During the rain scene, people put newspapers over their head and you'd squirt water guns. When you see Scott, you throw Scott toilet paper at the screen. When they do the toast at the dinner scene, you throw toast at the screen. During the wedding at the beginning, you throw rice. Like, there's all these stuff that just, like, developed, right? During Frankenstein Place, you, like, hold your lighter up, which eventually was frowned upon. They're like, put your fucking lighters away. We're in movie theater. Mm-hmm. but it just became a whole other beast, which is why it's so hard to explain to somebody when you're sitting in a living room in the afternoon watching it. And they're like, how does anyone like this? It's just like, when you see it live, it's a completely different thing. And once you right. have that context, it's a completely different thing. Right. This little tidbit made me laugh. says, in an interview with Terry Gross on her radio program, Fresh Air, Tim Curry said that he got to meet King Charles III and Princess Diana because she loved Curry in this movie. She requested the meeting while he was in the production of Love for Love that they attended. Curry recalled that he was placed at the end of the receiving line, and while Prince Charles only vaguely recognized Curry from seeing him on television, Princess Diana told Curry with a, quote, wicked smile that Rocky Horror had quite completed my education. I love that. So is there any trivia tidbits that I've missed that either of you want to share or anything you noticed from the movie?
No, not really.
Sam, you said your favorite song is Superheroes or what else?
Superheroes and Rose Tint My World.
And Touch a Touch a Touch Me is your favorite, Lacey?
Well, no. I guess Sweet Transvestite is probably my favorite.
Yeah.
And I like the reprise of Science Fiction Double Feature they do at the end.
Mm-hmm.
Because it ties the story up.
Yeah. Maybe not the production that's going on right now, but I would like to see the stage show eventually. There was a revival because it played on Broadway. Tim Curry reprised his role on Broadway. I forget how long it ran for the original run in the 70s, but in 2001, they did a Broadway revival and Joan Jett played Columbia.
Oh, wow.
And she shaved her head bald. It was a very punk heavy production. Like, everything was very punk inspired. So Columbia wasn't like in sequence and tap dancing. She like had guitar solos and was bald, and she's so hot. Like, every time I see bootlegs from it, I'm just like, oh my God, uh-huh. I would have been like in sixth grade at the time, but I would have killed to have seen that production. there's been a lot of like great, I mean, there's productions all over the world all the time, but there's been great tribute concerts. There's this one great tribute concert I remember from a few years ago that Anthony Stewart had performed Sweet Transvestite. I don't know if you guys know who that is. He's he plays the guy in Buffy the Vampire Slayer. He's like her teacher. Oh, and he's, yeah. You know, he's very uptight in that. He has like a really specific persona that he's popular for, but he's so sexy when he does Sweet Transvestite. Just like, yes, he's doing it. Then, of course, a few years ago, they did the remake for Fox that it was so bad that I almost don't want to talk about it.
Yeah.
Did you guys watch it?
Yeah. Yeah. It was not...
I just, there's so many things. There were so many things wrong with it. It was bad. And I think it was directed by the guy who directed High School Musical, Kenny Ortega, who has made a bunch of stuff I do like. I'm just like, Kenny, how could you fumble so hard, my man?
Yeah.
I don't know. This, of course, like Lacey said earlier, is referenced in so many TV shows and movies. That 70s show with Fez in his little panties and corset is hilarious.
That's one of my favorite episodes.
It was a good one. It's referenced in Perks of Being a Wallflower, which I also did an episode on. Go listen to that one. But Ezra Miller plays a character who does shadow casts and plays Frankenfurter. And they're so hot as Frankenfurter. I know Ezra Miller's problematic and they're a horrible person. I get that. But if we could turn back time, instead of just doing a number in Perks of Being a Wallflower, they should have made a remake with Ezra Miller as Frankenfurter. Because they were so hot. Emma Watson plays Janet, and she does Touch a Touch a Touch Me, so that's weird, seeing little Emma Watson in a bra singing that.
I'm like, oh, okay.
Yeah. Yeah. Have you ever seen that movie, Lacey? Have I ever made you watch it?
I feel like I made an attempt, but I don't remember anything.
It's really good. It's a bummer, but it's good. What's so funny about that movie to me is that I talk about this in the podcast, but they're all like teenage kids. They're like high school kids. And they're this cast of Rocky Horror. I'm like, you're not even allowed in to see Rocky Horror if you're not 18, let alone in it when you're like a sophomore.
Right.
And then at the end of that movie, these same kids like don't recognize a David Bowie song. I'm like, if you're enough of a nerd to be into Rocky Horror, you fucking know who David Bowie is and you know what David Bowie songs are.
Right.
Right. There's, I'm trying to think of other things that where they've done Rocky Horror references.
Family Guy.
Oh, yeah.
Peter dressed up as Frank.
Oh, Peter. I've seen a lot of different edits of people saying they should make a Rocky Horror Picture Show remake with the Muppets.
Yes.
Which I would pay a bajillion dollars
for that to happen. Yeah, I'm afraid I would too.
It would be fitting because I read a quote the other day. It said, the reason Tim Curry did so well in Muppet Treasure Island is instead of picturing himself as a human, he pictured himself as a fellow Muppet.
Oh, totally. Yeah, it's like him and Michael Caine do the best in those movies because Michael Caine treated the Muppets like fellow actors and right. Tim Curry treated himself as a fellow Muppet. Oh, Tim Curry. I'll be sad when he's gone.
No doubt.
He, you know, for a long time didn't like to talk about this movie because he didn't want to be typecast and everything, but he also, like, when you have a whole generation of people who, like, had sexual awakenings based on you, some people can be weird about it. And people were really weird to Tim Curry and made him really uncomfortable there for a long time. And he's even said that he's like, there was a point in my life where I just let myself get chubby and plain because I just wanted to separate myself from that identity so much. But later on in life, he, you know, grew to re-accept it. I mean, he makes a cameo in the remake. He plays the criminologist. So he fully like embraces it and he goes to conventions now and meets with fans and it's really sweet.
Oh yeah. You get old and you're like, man, them was the days. Everybody was smiling.
I still love him in Clue.
He's great in everything. Like he's just, I could make a whole playlist of episodes from this podcast that are about Tim Curry movies. We got this, we got Clue, we got Legend. I might do an episode on Fern Gully someday. I'm not going to lie. It might happen.
Pennywise, of course.
Pennywise, of course. Yeah. Oh, so great. Yeah. if you don't, like I said, if you've made it this far and have never seen Rocky Horror, I know this is all very confusing. But trust me when I say that it's just as confusing when you watch it.
Oh, yeah.
it won't become like magically clear. It's still really weird. And then, of course, there's the sequel to Rocky Horror, Shock Treatment, which carry on. There's some songs in Shock Treatment that I think are good. But it's nowhere near as good as Rocky Horror, both thematically, musically, everything is not as good.
I don't think I ever watched it more than one time.
I think I've seen it maybe twice.
Yeah, probably the same. I've seen it probably twice.
We own it, of course, but we don't watch it.
Oh, Richard O'Brien, you're a weird cat. The weirdest thing to me is, do you know that show Phineas and Ferb?
Oh, God, yeah.
Yeah, Richard O'Brien is the voice of their dad.
Stop.
Uh-huh.
I know, isn't that fucking random?
I low-key watched that a lot, actually.
That's a great show.
I like the voice.
Any final thoughts on Rocky Horror?
I don't know. It's weird.
Everybody needs to watch it at least twice.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Digest it and watch it again.
Yeah, totally. Watch it once. My suggestion is watch it once alone. Watch it again with friends. Watch it in a theater full of people. Then if by that point you don't love it, then you're a normie and there's nothing we can do to help you.
Yeah.
That's fair.
It is currently on Hulu. It comes and goes off of streaming pretty sporadically, so it's easy to miss, but it is on Hulu right now. And don't watch the remake, which I think is also streaming on Hulu. Don't even bother. Don't say, oh, I saw the Glee episode, so that counts. No, it doesn't count. Because Hillary said. It can't be overstated how important this movie is to me and to a bunch of queer people. So thank you for everybody for waiting, like I said, 4 years for us to cover it. But it's just, there's too much to even dive into culturally. But yeah, I hope you guys watch it. Everyone watches it for spooky season. I hope everyone has a happy Halloween. I don't know when this will be going up. This will either be coming up later today or late tomorrow night. It'll come up sometime. Y'all will see it before Halloween. It'll be uploaded. But other than that, we will see you next month. Thank you all for listening. And thank you to Lacey and Sam for joining me.
Thanks. No problem. It's fun.
And until next time, weirdos, don't dream it. Be it.